Good morning. Good morning, beloveds, and thank you very much, Ken. I'm going to go ahead and do a mic check to make sure my sound is okay. As you guys know, I normally have some sort of contraption running. So I want to make sure that, yes, and thank you. It looks like you all can hear me just fine. So welcome to our first gathering of November. It seems like I was just here talking recently, and I was here a couple of weeks ago, but we're back in our regular rotation, and it is the first Sunday of November. And so I want to welcome you all to our sanctuary this morning. I'm going to release the mic and ask Lynn to play our opening song as we greet one another on the board.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here, melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
All right, and thank you very much, Lynn. So good to see you all in the room. Congratulations to you there, Lisa Rose, on your new home out in Colorado Springs. It is, as I mentioned, the first day of, or not the first day, it's the first gathering of the month of November. And it's hard to believe that we're already preparing to close the year out, but indeed, that is where we're heading, straight towards the holiday season. Very quickly, I might add. All right, so let's go ahead and get started with today's gathering. Today, the topic is Emuna, trust in the Creator. So I'm going to start here with the Awakening Together statement of purpose. We are an assembly of equals, joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self, within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. All right, so that is our purpose here at Awakening Together. And that takes me right on up to our announcements for this week. And I do have a few announcements here. The first one is our 2017 fall retreat is over, and it was another successful fall retreat. Feedback from participants has been very positive. 51 people attended the retreat. Now that most of the bills are paid, it looks like we will have at least $6,500 in income from the fall retreat. So that's great news. We'd like to say thank you to everyone who volunteered at the retreat and to everyone who attended. You made this year's event another successful retreat. Yes, so that is absolutely wonderful, the retreat. I wasn't able to be present at this year's retreat, but I certainly thought very much about you all while you were out on retreat, and I knew that it was going to be a wonderful event, and I'm so very glad that it was. All right, so on to our next announcement. Now that the 2017 fall retreat is over, we can turn our attention towards our 2018 fall retreat, which is the Israel pilgrimage. Travel with Regina Dawn Akers to exciting holy sites, including Nazareth, the Jordan River, the Mount of Temptations, the Sea of Galilee, Capernaum, Old Jerusalem, and the site of the Last Supper, the Garden of Gethsemane. I can never say that word. Gethsemane, Golgotha, which is the place of the skull, the Garden Tomb, and much, much more. The 7-day pilgrimage is only $16.98 plus airfare and miscellaneous expenses. There is also an optional 5-day trip extension to southern Israel and Jordan. For full details, go to awakening-together.org and click retreats and classes. All right, so that is how you can get more information on the 2018 fall retreat. And next up, we are watching two movies for this month's movie discussion group: The Game, starring Michael Douglas, and The Man Who Knew Too Little, starring Bill Murray. These two movies go great together. They depict two different ways to experience the dream of separation. Watch The Game first, and then watch The Man Who Knew Too Little second. And then come to the movie discussion group on Sunday, November 26th, and let us know what you saw in these movies. And that movie discussion group is led by Reverend Jacqueline Eckert. All right, and lastly today, join us in the sanctuary tonight for Fully Human, Fully Divine Satsang with Craig Holiday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Also, Regina will be here at 7 p.m. Eastern with the 7 Steps to Awakening, followed by an archived Holy Spirit Guides audio. So that's what's going on in the sanctuary this evening. As always, we invite you all to return back to the sanctuary this evening to join us for some of those programs. Craig Holiday is still sharing with us, so that's wonderful. And so that does conclude our announcements for this week. I'm going to release the mic and ask Lynn to play us another song as we prepare for prayer. Thank you.
once, out of the blue, when I was unprepared, I started seeing you, hearing your voice, calling my name, across the universe, feeling a burning flame. Love will lead us on, everywhere we go. Love will lead us on, my heart tell me so. Love will lead us on, and on and on, and love will lead us on.
Thank you very much, Lynn, for that lovely little song. And if you'll join me now for prayer. There's always a very deep, deep sense of gratitude whenever I have this opportunity to share. And as I continue to experience gratitude at this very deep level, it becomes more and more evident that this gratitude is not my personal gratitude. It is a direct consequence of what we'll be talking about today, trust. And so it's from this place of gratitude that I always am grateful for everyone who comes into this sanctuary, who listens on the radio or listens to an audio at a later time. It is from that place that I'm always grateful to be in this position, to be able to share and acknowledge the goodness, the truth, the light within each of us. And so I give this gathering today over to Holy Spirit, asking only for the perfect and present will of God to be done in all things on earth as it is in heaven. And so it is, and so I let it be. Amen. All right, so let's go back here to our gathering for today. As I mentioned earlier, the topic of today's gathering is Emuna, trust in the Creator. That word Emuna comes from the book The Way by Michael Berg. Today, we'll be talking about trust in the Creator. My reader for today, it's Tony, and she'll be joining us here to read from Chapter 6, The 12 Spiritual Laws of the Way, and particularly Law 4, which is Trust in the Creator. So, Tony, I'm going to release this mic and ask you to come forward and read.
Good morning, everyone, and happy first day of the new time change. Okay. This is the reading. In every relationship, trust, step by step, trust is built from shared experiences over time, experiences that tell us when someone has our best interest at heart. We give people our trust today and tomorrow because they have been trustworthy in the past. Our relationship with the Creator is no different. Emuna, or trust in the Creator, is not blind faith. It arises from an understanding of the spiritual laws and from certainty that the Creator always intends what is best for us. Emuna, simply put, means embracing the principle that whatever happens is best for us. Clearly, this is a difficult step to take. If we are mugged on the street, our natural inclination is to be angry and upset at the person who committed the crime and at the Creator for allowing such a thing to happen. It may be hard to imagine a state of mind in which a mugging is seen as exactly what was needed at that precise moment. Yet, for that rare person who trusts the Creator, this is precisely how the event would be viewed. As the book of Job so eloquently puts it, "Though he slay me, yet I will trust in him." Though few of us have reached this level of Emuna, it represents a degree of spiritual development toward which we all can aspire every day of our lives. The aspiration itself expresses a desire to trust, which Kabbalah recognizes as a first step toward the goal. Our task is to move toward the transformed state of being in which we trust completely and without hesitation. Earlier, we discussed how the amount of light that we reveal in a particular action depends upon our understanding of the power we have to reveal that light. The more we recognize our power to reveal the light of the Creator, the more light we reveal. Now we will add a corollary to this spiritual law. The deeper trust in the Creator, the more power we have. Emuna is a beyond understanding in the everyday sense of the word. It involves much more than an intellectual grasp of the situation. It is more than just belief based on logical consideration of facts. Most of us, for example, have an understanding that if we act in a sharing way with someone, positive things will happen as a result of our action. The more we understand that our actions have positive effects in the world, the more possibility there is for a positive result. There is a cause and effect logic to this transaction. Immuno, however, involves faith and certainty that the effects of our positive actions extend beyond anything we can possibly understand. Understanding is an element of our trust and faith in the Creator, but we need to recognize that human understanding is limited. Immuno knows no limits. Immuno alone can make the sun stand still in the sky. Immuno alone can part the Red Sea. Indeed, the parting of the Red Sea in the book of Exodus is perhaps the most striking example of the power of trust. Just imagine the scene. The terrified children of Israel were trapped at the edge of the water with the mighty Egyptian army bearing down on them from behind. Then Moses stretched out his arm and his staff. He called upon the waters to part, and what happened? According to Kabbalistic teaching, nothing. Not a wave changed its course. Not a single drop of water receded. To bring about a miracle in the natural world, the people had to first create a miracle in their own hearts. In keeping with this, the Bible reports that when Moses told the Israelites, "Have no fear and witness the deliverance God will work for you today," the Creator responded, "Why do you cry out to me? Tell the Israelites to go forward." This somewhat surprising command does not mean that the Creator was indifferent to his people's fate. Rather, it means that God has given us the spiritual tools to meet any challenge that presents itself, including the tool of absolute trust. But to benefit from that tool, we must act accordingly. The sages tell us that a single man, not shown, that's his name, took it upon himself to enter the water, and he did so with total certainty. Still, he was soon engulfed up to his neck, and the Red Sea had not parted. A moment later, he was choked by water pouring into his throat, and it was at this instant that the real miracle was accomplished. Even Nachshon was about to drown. His trust never wavered, and a split second later, the waters formed a wall up to the heavens. The inner condition of one man's soul was mirrored in the behavior of physical reality. Like Nachshon, we must combine the power of trust with the power of deeds. Sometimes this can mean taking actions that might be described as counterintuitive, though few of us will be called upon to wade into the ocean. More often, the correct action is simply common sense, which should always be accompanied by higher awareness. If we're ill, we must seek medical attention, though Kabbalah tells us that it is the light of the Creator that will cure us. The act of going to the doctor, together with our trust in the light, culminates in healing. And the more trust we have, the less action is needed. Thank you very much, Gloria.
All right, and thank you very much, Tony. That was Tony Fields. As I was introducing her there, when I go from a praying state, that's more of an unfocused way for me, and then coming back into focus, sometimes my brain freezes up a little bit, and it did when I was introducing Tony. So that was Tony Fields. She's actually an MPP student, and I had the opportunity to meet her recently during one of our MPP classes. So thank you very much, Tony. All right, so that was the reading, Immuno, Trust in the Creator, And I do want to share one of our core values before I talk about that reading a little bit today. And the core value that I'm looking to share is core value number 4. We affirm one true self as the only truth. We live this value by embracing what is helpful on the path of awakening without idolizing any spiritual doctrine as truth. And again, that's core value number 4 from Awakening Together's website. You can check out our core values there on the website if you're needing to do that. So let's talk about Imuna. A couple of things in that reading quickly, even as she read it. I've read it a few times as I've contemplated this reading for today. But as she read it, there were a couple of things, again, that jumped out right away for me. One was that Imuna simply means whatever happens. And I just want to highlight a couple of these points here. Whatever happens is always for the best. So that's basically what Michael Berg is sharing that Imuna means. And then as well, there's this faith and certainty. All right. In the Course in Miracles, in the teacher's manual, there's 10 characteristics that are shared in A Course in Miracles of God's teacher. And one of the things I noticed was that the primary characteristic there is trust. Right. I saw that the Course states that it's that characteristic is the foundation there for our ability to feel fulfill our function, right? So the ability to fulfill our function rests on this trust thing. And I did want to share what those other characteristics are that the Course shares are for the teachers of God. The first one, of course, is that trust. Secondly, it was honesty, tolerance, gentleness, joy, defenselessness, generosity, patience, faithfulness, and open-mindedness. Now, I thought there were a lot of really, you know, fabulous characteristics there. But again, the one that matters the most, the one that was given the most weight in that 6 stages of developing trust was definitely trust. So right up front, I saw that it wasn't just that trust was, you know, given, it was trust is earned. You know, when I went through all of the different developmental stages, and I did capture a few of those that I'll talk about here in a moment, but, you know, it seemed like, not like work, but it's earned. And that's what Michael Berg pointed out in the book as well. So when I thought to myself, you know, just trust this process, trust the process, trust that everything is going to be okay, because that's basically what Imuna means here. What I'm actually saying is that I believe with all certainty that God's laws reign supreme. You know, and I talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago when I shared about this God's law, about what that is. But ultimately, it's the belief that, you know, what we truly are can never be harmed or diminished. So today I wanted to touch on this topic of trust, because as always, you know, I talk about what's most relevant for me. And like I said, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about seeing our problems as gifts in strange packaging. So as a natural result of seeing problems as gifts in strange packaging, quite naturally, trust has to come into place, right? How could you begin to look at an issue or a perceived problem and have the ability to move beyond that without this level of trust. So these two topics go hand in hand. What I talked about a couple of weeks ago, seeing these issues as gifts in strange packaging, this conversation on trust is right in line with that, because you can't have one without the other. You can't rest peacefully without this sense of trust. So let's talk a little bit more about how this particular reading highlights this trust, and then as well as that development of trust section there, what it has to say about this. So Michael Berg shared an example in that reading about a guy being mugged on the street, and how he embraced whatever happens is always for the best. Now, at the end of the day, we could exchange that mugging for anything that's going on in our life, anything that's actively drawing our attention away from the truth, right? At any given moment, we can apply this principle. And as I've experienced, the application of that principle itself, in and of itself, doesn't necessarily bring about the peace and joy that I've read about or that I've seen in various stories or heard in various different teachers that share. And it's that peace and joy that's that inevitable result of gentleness from that from the characteristics that I just talked about. So the question that I pondered, the question that I had about this was, how is it possible for me to intellectually accept and recognize the truth in this statement, whatever happens is always for the best, this immuna? How is it possible that I would still experience even a little bit of unrest in the situation, right? If I intellectually understand and accept this principle of immuna, that whatever happens is for the best, how is it that there's any level of unrest within the body at all? So I embraced that question at a deeper level, and I really allowed that question to be here without searching for an answer, right? Without reaching out, trying to figure out how that's possible to truly believe that statement and have a different experience. Looking back at that man who was mugged there, you know, surely his eyes had to have reported to him that there was a lot of pain involved in that mugging, right? His privacy was violated, his sense of safety even. You know, all of that had to create what Michael Singer would call a samskara, an internal memory, a permanent memory of that particular event. So, you know, this impression of pain, this samskara that the gentleman who was mugged there, you know, all of that would have produced that, but yet he was still able to say, you know, whatever happens is always for the best. Let's look closer here at the A Course in Miracles development of trust, those six stages. Because again, when I pondered this idea, this question, how is this possible? The development of trust is where I ended up, you know, going back and looking at this development of trust. And what I was able to see there is that, you know, when I went back to that section, I noticed that 4 out of the 6 stages seem challenging. Like, for instance, here I have the 4 here someplace that, okay, here it is. The 4 out of the 6 stages that seem challenging. The first one was number 1. First, they must go through what might be called a period of undoing. And within that section there, this need not be painful, but is usually so experienced. The second one was, next, the teacher of God must go through a period of sorting out. This is always somewhat difficult, right? The third one, the third stage through which the teacher of God must go, can be called a period of relinquishment. And that's interpreted as giving up the desirable, and it engenders enormous conflict. And then the fourth one, the 4th of the 6, was the next stage is indeed a period of unsettling. And now he must attain a state that may remain impossible to reach for a long, long time. So you see, as I went back and I read through this development of trust, and I noticed all of these challenges here, right? And it drew me back to how trust is earned and why trust would need to be earned. Because of all of this is done in developing this trust. And when I first read through that, I went, you know, this doesn't look very appealing. This doesn't have the sparkly, it doesn't have that sparkly effect, you know. You know, some parts of the course, you read them and you go, all right, yes, that is, you know, that makes you feel very expanded, very, you know, open and receptive to what you're reading. But this was kind of like, whoa, you know, this development of trust thing can be challenging because of the fact that it's earned. Now, I'm going somewhere with bringing those 4 challenges back into back up for discussion here, because the original question was, again, how is it that I can intellectually accept that having this trust in God and understanding that whatever happens is always for the best? 2 words in that sentence, whatever and always, right? Those are the 2 words that cause the internal conflict for me, I think, is the whatever and the always, because that leaves nothing out of the equation, right? That means that nothing is outside of our ability to trust. As a matter of fact, there was also one other statement, one other section in this reading from Michael Berg that I really, really, really was really grateful that he included here. And that was that God has given us the spiritual tools to meet any challenge that presents itself, including the tool of absolute trust, which means that we do have the capability to trust absolutely in whatever happens, and to trust that it's always for the best. So again, this question of how can we look upon things like a mugging, or not having enough, or having difficulty in our relationships, or any other combination of events that could potentially be going on for anyone at any given time? How can we look upon those things with this immuna, with this faith and certainty that whatever happens is always for the best? I could certainly see that, you know, trust is not something that's developed by passively making statements about how we're trusting and how things are, you know, what we believe in. It's a path, the path that we're on, actually, the path to awakening, gradually letting go of judgments, including the habit of judging what's best for us or anybody else at any given moment. We don't know that. We can't know that. We can't know that. As much as we'd like to say at times that this, that, or the other would make me feel so much better right now, I'd be so much more peaceful and happier right now if this thing were happening or if that thing were happening. I shared at my last gathering that Peace Pilgrim, she shared how a wealthy lady, you know, a lady that she had been helping or was there to help, how she had been shielded from adversity. She had no sense of maturity about herself. You know, we hear about these rare instances where people awaken spontaneously and they remember that they're whole, without blemish, and fully connected to the Creator. So I know that it's possible to remember and be free here, but it's like a human nature for us to avoid this pain, to avoid pain at all costs. So the work then is for us to balance this human nature to avoid pain. That human tendency to worry, to fear, to doubt. That's the work, to balance that out with our wholeness, with stepping into that wholeness. So again, as I pondered that question, going back to this question of how is it possible to understand this intellectually and still experience any level of unrest, as I pondered that more, Holy Spirit really helped me to embrace that it was doubt that was producing that sense of unrest, right? That tendency that I talked about, that human nature to avoid pain, to be safe. And what this idea of immuna, this principle of immuna is all about, it's all about faith and certainty. So I look at the areas where I'm doubting. Where am I doubting that whatever happens is always for the best? Where is there doubt in the mind? You know, and it always goes back to what my eyes are reporting. It always comes back to what I see out in the world. And then when I see that it's mostly based on this perception on what my eyes are witnessing, at that point I'm able to deconstruct that more, because I know that my eyes are not capable of reporting what the truth is to me. They're not capable of revealing the nature of my wholeness. They can only report to me what I believe either within myself or what's believed as a collective, as a whole, My eyes are not capable of reporting to me what the truth is, you see. So once I'm at that stage of questioning where this doubt exists in me, then it's over. It's seen for what it is, an illusion. And at that point, I can move into that immune space. Whatever happens is always for the best. Whatever I'm experiencing, that guy who was mugged, you know, somehow, somewhere there was something there that needed to occur. You know, we can't know the whys and the outcomes or the reasons why things are the way they are. But again, this faith and certainty that whatever happens is always for the best, the believing that in it at a deeper level, it's not just a belief. There's, again, this faith and certainty that's involved, because I've experienced that surface belief, right? What I'm calling a surface belief. And by surface belief, I mean you've heard it. You can see it's the truth. You know it's the truth, but it's not your experience. And as a result, that human tendency to doubt, that human tendency to go into fear and to worry kicks in, creating just enough doubt that the full experience of peace that we're entitled to, that we're given, as I stated earlier, going back to Michael Berg's reading here, God has given us the spiritual tools to meet any challenge that presents itself, including the tool of absolute trust. So we have this magnanimous ability to trust. So for me, the work is acknowledging when there's doubt somewhere, right? Not having this Pollyanna, you know, approach, like everything's good, I know everything's good, but inside I'm, you know, something else is happening. You know, there's an internal experience that's not good, that doesn't feel good. So you know that something's, you know, somewhere something is off. And so now when I experience that, I know to go and look for the doubt, to uncover that. Because as Holy Spirit revealed to me as I was studying this particular, what I'm talking about today, that it's the doubt that prevents me from experiencing the full peace that comes with totally accepting, 100% accepting that whatever happens is always for the best. This immuna. During our morning meditation this morning, Karen Worth shared with us from Lesson 289 about letting go of the past and remaining constant here in the present, which was a beautiful meditation, by the way. Thank you, Reverend Karen. There was also, you know, our Lesson 289 was in today's daily contemplation. The past is over. It can touch me not. Now, I mentioned today's Lesson 289 this principle that the past is over. This ability to remain constant in the present. I mention that because there is a correlation there between our ability to be in this faithful, certain place and being in the present, right? I also talked about how it's human nature for us to avoid pain. Human nature, you know, so we're not guilty here for a moment for experiencing pain or experiencing whatever comes with the belief in illusions. We're not guilty for that. It's a human characteristic, and we are humans. But for those of us who are called, who know that we are, that there's more to it than this, that there's more to this than what I'm presently experiencing, whatever that may be. And we're growing in our maturity at a rate that requires that we look at those beliefs. It requires it of us. There, for me, I have no options. There's not like I can choose to not see. You can't unknow what you know. So there comes a point in time where you can't not question what the experience is. And I'm sure probably many of you who are hearing my voice right now are already at this place. I'm preaching to the choir, as they say, where you can't not question the reality of what you're seeing, what the eyes are reporting. And so that continues, as I stated, this lesson for today is relevant. Because so much of our ability to trust rests in our ability to remain in this present moment, to remain right here, and not to pull our past experiences or our past events into this present, or those samskaras, to bring them into this present moment and allow them to filter our reality. Because that's when that doubt creeps in, right? That's when what I've experienced is not being able to know the truth and not feeling the truth in my being. Still experiencing the nervousness or the worries, or, you know, I see them there and I know they're there. So the work for me is now to begin to question why that experience is still there. And as I stated, in doing so, I pointed out how, you know, you ultimately get to a point where you can deconstruct that and you can see through it and see it for what it truly is. And again, one of the keys here is that the eyes simply don't report the truth. Michael Berg said in his book as well that the deeper our trust in the Creator, the more power we have. So that clicked on the light for me as well. Trust, power. Trust, power. Trust is power. So without that trust, our power to reveal the light our power to share the light that is within us. It's just not as effective. It's somehow not as powerful as it was designed to be without this level of trust. So there was also an interesting, at the beginning of this particular chapter, there was a story in here about a student and a rabbi, and I didn't include that in the original reading that Tony did earlier. I left the story about the rabbi out, but I am guided to talk about that story a little bit right now. And it's just that there was a student and a rabbi, they were both in line at a train station, and the rabbi was waiting in line without money. And the student comes along and, you know, he's trying to be a good student, and he goes and he purchases this rabbi the ticket and comes back to the rabbi and says, hey, you know, here's your ticket. And the rabbi's like, yeah, thank you. You know, I needed that. And student looks at him and he's like, well, where's my money for the ticket? And he's like, oh, I don't have any money. He said, but you were in line waiting for this ticket. How, what do you mean you don't have any money? The rabbi responds, you know, I was in line because that's the action I was guided to take. And God sent you here to give me the ticket that I needed. And the student's like, you know, well, what about me? I don't have any money. And the rabbi casually looks at him and says, you better get in line too then. So that's the level of trust that we're being called to hear. This level of faith and certain trust that whatever we're in need of will be provided. That rabbi was, you know, absolutely certain that somebody would come along and purchase his ticket and allow him to board the train. And indeed, you know, the student did come by, you know, and save the day. And there was another example in that story, that example of Nakshon or Narkshon, the gentleman there, or, you know, when the sea was parting, the Red Sea. There was something I wanted to point out there about that story. That guy, what was his name here? Let me see if I can say his name correctly. Nakshon, okay? He was up to his neck. The water was, you know, coming in, you know, it was drowning at that point. And this reading says that's when the miracle was accomplished, at the point where he was drowning and still he had faith. Still he was certain that his God would see him through that. At that point is where the miracle occurred. But you see, the water had to come up to the neck. It had to get to the point where he felt like he was drowning before the miracle occurred. And I thought that was a profound story about how things can appear. You know, again, what the eyes are reporting. I'm drowning here. Oh, there's a miracle occurring here. Things are changing that you may not be able to see are changing. And oftentimes we can't see, we don't see what's happening behind the curtains or outside of our limited awareness. This guy was drowning. He was already taking on water before the miracle occurred. And also the mention of having to do things that seem counterintuitive. Going back to the story of the rabbi standing in line without money. For most of us, that's a counterintuitive step to take. We're not going anywhere without proof that we'll be taken care of when we get there. Most of us. Peace Pilgrim was that way too. She'd travel out into different areas and different places and not knowing where her sustenance would come from that day or her sleep, where she'd sleep that night. But she was always taken care of. So being willing and open to doing things that may not seem normal or seem, as the reading pointed out here, counterintuitive. Being open for that, for those opportunities, because that is how we build this trust. That is how this trust is earned. That is how we get to a point of whatever happens is always for the best. Yes, I am sustained by the love of God. Absolutely. That is probably the biggest statement of trust we could ever make. That we are indeed sustained by the love of God. All right, so I feel complete with what I wanted to share today about this trust. Developing trust. Getting to a point of faith and certainty. We are gifted with this ability to have absolute trust in the Creator. And so I'm going to ask Barb to post a link in the room for those of you who are interested in making a donation to Awakening Together. Your donations are always welcome and greatly appreciated. And I'm also going to ask Lynn to play a song for contemplation so that we can ponder this level of trust, faith, and certainty in our Creator. And as always, love to you all.
Andrews. to bow and to bend, we will not be ashamed to turn.
All right, and thank you very much, Lynn, for that song there. And again, that was just a moment to contemplate this principle of trust. I almost called it an idea, but it truly is a principle. And it's a foundational principle for us as students of awakening. And so if anyone would like to share on anything from today's reading or today's sharing, you can raise your hand at this time. And Regina, I see your hand is up, and I'll go ahead and release the mic to you.
Okay, first, just like a little joke. I don't know if Kathy's spelling of the name Nekshon was correct. Or if she was just doing it by sound. But when she wrote Nekshon the way she did, which was N-E-C-K-S-H-O-N, it just kind of hit me that it was kind of funny that Nekshon was up to his neck in water. But with the joke aside, you know, what Nekshon demonstrated for us was, you know, that his trust was absolute, just like Job's trust in the Bible. Nekshon's trust was absolute. Like, it wasn't, I trust God up until maybe I'm going to die, then I need to rely back on my own self-wisdom, right? Meaning the little self-wisdom, you know, and get the heck out of there. He trusted God up to and including if I die. And at first, it may sound crazy to trust God that far, you know, up to including if I die. But actually, if you really just pause for a moment and look at it, Nekshon is not the only one that demonstrated that. Jesus demonstrated that. In fact, that was the decision that Jesus made in the Garden of Gethsemane. You know, he had a lot of fear about bodily death, but in the end, he decided to trust God, you know, and to surrender his will to God's will no matter what. Also, Byron Katie, you know, there's a story about Byron Katie and how a man pulled a gun on her and was going to shoot her. And, you know, for her, the trust was very natural because there was already no ego left. You know, so for her, it was just like, oh, I wonder how, if this is how the Katie character is going to end. She even had less ego at that point than Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane, to be honest. So it was, you know, complete, like if Katie dies now, this is perfect, right? And then we also have Peace Pilgrim. You know, Peace Pilgrim has a story about how he was walking, I think it was in New Mexico one night, when an unseasonable snowstorm came and she was about to freeze to death. And she was willing to allow that to happen. You know, there was no anger at God or anything for putting her in that circumstance. She was willing for death to happen. And then she had that vision, which told her it wasn't her time. And after that, she saw underneath the bridge the big moon box with the wrapping paper or newspaper or something in it. And she was able to get in there and find shelter. So, you know, we have many stories. I'm sure there are others as well. Many stories about people with absolute trust. I trust you, Father, trust you, God, trust you, universe, no matter what, even if I die now. I mean, that's absolute trust. And if you think about it, that level of trust is what's going to be needed when it comes time for the ego death, because the ego death feels like a death. And if we only trust God up to a point, then when the opportunity comes for that awakening through ego death, we're going to back off. So I only trust you up to this point, but not to the point of death. So I'm stopping now and going back, relying on my little self again. So we need to have that absolute trust without any line, not even death. So thank you very much for such a motivational sermon today. I release the mic.
All right, and thank you, Regina. That is very, I agree, blissful one, a very helpful reminder that the trust is not just until my circumstances are corrected. The trust is absolute. Thank you. Kathy, this mic is yours.
Thank you. On the heels of what Regina just said with the absolute trust portion of it, while she was speaking, I couldn't help but think that that absolute trust, at least how I'm seeing it right now, really comes from that claiming of the truth of who I am. That is where the absolute trust, that's its home, so to speak. And so I couldn't help but think about our lesson for today when you were speaking, Reverend Gloria, the past is over, it can touch me not, because that notion of trust, at least in my own life, seems to be so centered on the past, on what's been done in the past, what's been said in the past, what's been the behavior of the past. And so that level of trust, if my attention is based on those situations or people or times when, you know, it seemed to be less than appealing, and I didn't embrace it as an opportunity for healing, those are the very times that seem to erode the present moment trust and reflect where my attention is placed. If my attention is still focused on all of that past that doesn't even exist anymore, it only exists in the nuttiness of my own thought system. And I watched the movie Revolver last night, and that scene where Jake is being inundated with going back and forth between presence and his ego, literally like screaming at him, came to mind as well today, just in reflection of the notion of trust. Am I going to trust the voice that I've listened to for, you know, most of my life, that chatter voice, that ego voice that Regina spoke about in our tip for the day? The voice that, you know, is the ego chatter, chaotic, screaming at you to revert back to an old pattern or an old way of reacting or seeing something. And that's based on distrust, plain and simple, because if I examine the evidence or the results or the feelings that I'm experiencing as a result of where I'm placing my attention, I can clearly see that if that doesn't work, that place of distrust, or you know, the ego turning, saying, turn to me, trust me, it simply doesn't work. And even Nirmala said in one of his satsangs before he went on, was that, you know, whatever you have to do when you notice that voice, you know, it's like Jake standing at, you know, at the edge of that bed and his, you know, head seemingly just in that absolutely chaotic place where you see yourself actually looking at that voice or hearing that voice. So there is that presence there, and you acknowledge that, but there still seems to be this immense conflict going on about, you know, the choice. And to me, that choice always feels related to a past, a very sticky past where I'm wanting to justify my feelings. I'm trying to keep, you know, not keep the emotions, but justify the emotions or act as if they're me. I mean, there's that strong identification with that aspect of the human self. And it can be so helpful to remember to just step away from the intensity of that situation. And like Nirmala said, if you have to get to a point where, you know, in your own mind, you're at a high pitch telling your ego basically to shut the hell up, do that, you know, whatever it takes, do that. And so I have noticed that for myself, you know, very much so in the last week or so, even in meditation. Meditation has been very challenging. I so need the intermittent instructions, especially in the hour-long meditations that Karen has, because I am somewhere else so quickly and so often this week that it's like just one of those wow weeks. I feel like I've gone, you know, backwards in the resting and relaxing in the meditation because the ego is just screaming so loudly. Yeah, so that's just my experience, but I appreciate what was shared, Reverend Gloria. It was very, very helpful, and trust is extremely important. And what am I trusting in? Who am I trusting in? Am I letting myself, the truth of who I am? Am I centered in that, staying with that? And right now, I'm willing and I'm trying. It's just been very challenging. So I'll release the mic.
All right. Thank you so much, Kathy. That was great. I love how that pointed out the correlation there to Lesson 289, remaining in the present moment. I also love this acronym Iris has posted in the room. Trust is to rely upon spirit totally. All right. So I am going to close the gathering out. I do see, Dove, your hand is up, and I am going to turn this mic over to you as soon as I close this out, and we'll go into fellowship hour just in case anyone needs to go ahead and leave. So I, again, thank you all for being here today. Do stay and join us for fellowship hour. Which is led by Reverend Becky and Reverend Ken. So I'm going to release this mic, closing out the gathering. And again, I'm going to allow Dove to speak during fellowship hour. And do we want to play a song before we move into fellowship hour, Lynn? All right, wonderful. Then after that song, Dove, the mic is yours. Thank you all.
To you. There is a line in the course that said, trust would settle all problems now. Trust would settle all problems now. Actually, we really have no problems. The only problem is that we don't trust, which means that we live in fear. Once we develop total trust, the other nine, which is honesty or consistency or sustainability, I am sustained by the love of God, tolerance, which is I don't judge, and I don't see judgment as real, gentleness, which is I can't harm, I can't be harmed, generosity, patience, joy, defenselessness, faithfulness, and open-mindedness. They're all given to us. Actually, they're already ours. But you can't experience it as long as you're resisting trust. So that's why trust is the only one that we are responsible for. Once we have that, we really have all that the Son of God, the daughter of God, has been given. That's when you can say, I am sustained by the love of God and know that it's true. Lesson number 5 is true. Maybe it took me my entire Course in Miracles study to actually come to that recognition that lesson 50, I am sustained by the love of God, is true. It's not just another lesson. And I wanted to say the easiest way to develop trust, and pretty much that's why these rooms on Powell Talk were started many years ago, way back when we first came here, ACM gathered back in 2004, 2005. It was the recognition that your willingness, key word here is willingness, to actually say, well, let me take my place among the teachers. You may not have thought that that was something that you could do, and it does say to teach is to demonstrate, certainly not to read from a book, but to demonstrate. And what is it that I'm demonstrating? I'm demonstrating trust, because as you practice this over and over and over, and most of the new teachers say, well, suppose I don't know what to say, and we always say, take a look at page 28. He gives you exactly what to say. I'm here only to be truly helpful. I'm here only to be truly helpful, which is the truth, by the way. I don't have to know what to say. I don't have to know what to do. He who sent me will direct me. Your willingness to practice this week in and week out, like I remember when Reb Gloria first said that she would, she really wants to, she had just been ordained as a minister. She said, I'm really ready to be a minister, you know. And I watched her in that development of trust along the way, you know, her teaching has become so powerful. I mean, there's no accident. I saw so many people said, oh, your teaching was so timely, I really needed to hear it. Well, spirit that knows what everyone needs is always speaking to us and through us. But it's our willingness to step back and allow that spirit to speak to us and through us that we develop the trust, that the light that actually begins to burn bright in our own mind and our heart, it just melts away the fear that was there. There is nothing to fear, truly, other than my listening to a voice that distrust. So my willingness to develop total trust is just my willingness to say, you know, Father, I am here. You know, as Jesus said, Hina ni, Father, I am here, going about your business. I just want to encourage all to really take their place among the teachers. There's many places in the schedule here at Awakening Together that are still open and still looking for someone to say, I'm ready, I'm here. When? Now. That's when you want to develop trust. Now, not sometime in the future. There is no such thing as sometime in the future. And with that, I'm just going to turn this mic back to you, Ken. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening.